or 9.
Hi, everybody. Jim Howell from the KFNX Weather Center. A pretty nice weekend, but it will be much cooler. No more 80-degree temperatures. We're mid-70s today and only about 70 tomorrow with increasing cloudiness. Then for this upcoming week, cooler still, mid to upper 60s. Jim Howell, Independent Talk, 1100 KFNX.
Currently, in downtown Phoenix, it's 56 degrees.
Singleton's Real Health Outpatient and Wellness Centers provide housing resources to those in need. We also offer treatment services in the areas of mental health, physical well-being, counseling, advocacy, education, and empowerment for independence. We work with other care providers and businesses to provide total care for the mind and body. Call 602-626-8150. Singleton's Real Health Outpatient and Wellness Centers, devoted to empowering our community. To see if we can be of help to you, call 602-626-8150.
Ace Automotive at 1730 West Sunrise Boulevard, Suite A105, Gilbert, Arizona, just off McQueen and Elliott. The team at Ace, just what you need when you're having automotive issues. They are dependable and stand by their work. This is PLR of The Cave Show, and I've been a customer for years, and I would never send you to a place that I wouldn't trust. Their number is 480-539-6872, 480-539-6872. Call for an appointment or just stop by Ace Automotive.
Hi, folks. It's Dean Barber. If you've been listening to America's Wealth Management Show, you know about the importance of finding all of your options when it comes to taking Social Security. You also know the total amount of money at risk between the worst and the best time to begin taking Social Security could be over $100,000. To find out how much Social Security you could get, go to SocialSecurityPhoenix.com. That's SocialSecurityPhoenix.com. Then tune into America's Wealth Management Show every Saturday afternoon at 2. Join us and learn about important retirement topics.
Live from the downtown studios of KFNX News Talk Radio 1100, it's time for The Pulse, Arizona's healthcare radio show. Your voice for healthcare issues locally, around the state, and across the nation. Here now, consultant, advocate, and provider of healthcare services in Arizona, Elizabeth Singleton.
Good morning and welcome to The Pulse. I'm your host, Elizabeth Singleton, on Independent Talk 1100, KFNX. Today, we'll be talking about a personal recovery story of individuals living with mental health issues or illness, let me say. And we also will be talking about case management within the mental health community. I would like to thank my advisory board today. We had a wonderful meeting, and we've had a lot of good context come out of that, and we look forward to posting that on our website and also on our fan page. And I would like to thank the advisory board's members that came out, Joseph Kovac, Randy Webb, Cedric Jones. I'm going to say all three. Kara Zarnacki. And then there were some more board members that were unable to come out today, but we talked about some great discussions. And my co-host today will be Randy Webb, who's also on our board members. So if you would like to get more information about The Pulse, you can contact us or visit our website at thepulseaz.com. And you can also find us on Facebook at The Pulse AZ Radio. And I would like to introduce our first guest, and again, welcome Randy Webb for coming on the show and co-hosting with me. Our first guest is Obadiah Mattson. Obadiah has a wife of 20 years, and he has two beautiful daughters, a 16-year-old and 11-year-old, and he lives with a mental illness, and we're going to hear about his story today. Welcome, Obadiah.
Thank you for having me here.
Thank you for coming on the show. Could you just tell us what you're doing now in the mental health community and a little bit about your story?
Which way would you like me to start with? That's a lot of information.
Just go ahead and tell us a little bit about your diagnosis and your story.
Okay. At age 14, I first started hearing voices, and I thought those voices were demons. And when I went to church and family members and told them what I was experiencing, we attributed those voices to demons. 12 years later, I was working in the mental health field as a case manager for ComCare, and I started realizing that individuals who were hearing voices who thought they were demons, they had the same concerns, and when they had the same concerns, they went to the doctor who prescribed medication, and their voices left. And so in my mind and in my theology, nothing can make a demon leave. A medication can't. Only God can do that. So I started thinking, well, maybe I have a mental illness. So 12 years after starting my symptoms, I was diagnosed with a severe mental illness.
And your diagnosis is?
Currently, I have several labels. the first label is bipolar disorder with psychotic features. I also have panic disorder. But wait, there's more. I have obsessive compulsive traits.
Okay. And when you tell me a little bit about what life was like before you were diagnosed to you. What was your world like? What were you experiencing?
Well, it was very difficult. I was in the eighth grade. There was a song by Van Halen at the time called Jump. I just dated myself. And I thought that the devil told that band to write that song so I would jump off something and kill myself. Mm. After several months, the voices left, and I thought that God healed me. And then they came back again at age 16. And I was having command hallucinations to kill myself. And then...
And just explain to our audience what command hallucinations is.
I was hearing voices, which I attributed to demons, and they were telling me to kill myself.
Okay.
So then, after a while, those left. And so I did good the rest of my high school life. And then I went to school. And when I was in Bible college... my senior year, I was having problems again. My junior year, I was at the top of my class. I was one of the flag bearers for the graduation because I was one of the top two students. And the next year, I barely passed. And so that was very difficult. From Bible college, I entered social work, and that's how I got into the mental health field and discovered that I had a mental illness.
But did any of the stages in your life, did anyone ever think that you had a mental health issue, or did inside your head, the experiences that you were having, were you confronting people to say, maybe I need some help some other way?
Not really. There was one time after when I was a senior in Bible college, I was really, really suicidal, and my dad was concerned, and he took me to a psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist was telling me that he thought I might have some problems with mental illness. And I'm like, no, I don't. It's demons. I don't have mental illness. It's demons. And he was kind of alluding to putting me in the hospital, so I never saw him again. And it wasn't until several years after that that I was diagnosed. But when I was growing up, I had no idea. Like I said, I thought it was demons.
You thought it was demons. So you said that you were diagnosed with bipolar. Can you explain? A lot of our audience have listened before, and we've talked about it before. But for those who are newly listening, can you explain what each of your diagnoses are?
Well, originally I was diagnosed with major depression with psychotic features because a lot of times people who have bipolar, they're diagnosed with depression because that's what they go to the doctor for.
Mm.
And so I had very severe depression. I wanted to die. I also had psychotic features, which means I was hearing things. And most of the time, those were voices telling me to either hurt myself or voices telling me how terrible of a person I was. It wasn't until about 2000 that I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder. And the difference with bipolar disorder and depression is bipolar, you also have the times of the mania. And mania can feel really good. I mean, when I was manic, it wasn't seen as an illness. I was seen as a great worker. I took on all of these projects. I was doing great in everything. I was doing community service. I was doing church volunteer work. I was doing a good job at my job. And everybody thought, oh, Obadiah is a really great worker. But that was mania.
Okay.
Mania can also be having delusions of grandeur. I used to think that the devil put me on his hit list, that I was on his top 10 hit list, and that he assigned special demons to come after me. I thought things like that, too. So I had some delusions going on with that.
So... Now, you were diagnosed with bipolar, and you said you were hearing voices. Isn't that usually a form of schizophrenia?
Well, There is bipolar, and people do have psychotic features with it.
Okay.
A lot of times, bipolar disorder with psychotic features can be confused with schizoaffective disorder.
Okay.
And schizoaffective disorder is kind of like having a psychotic disorder like schizophrenia, but also with the mood disorder components. But I, my official title, my official label, not title, label is bipolar disorder with psychotic features.
So how were you able to function with work with getting a degree and being able to get a job if you were not on medications or receiving any services for your mental illness?
Up until the year 2000, I functioned pretty good. I might have had to take a couple weeks out here and there. I might have done poorly in school, might have struggled a little bit in work, but never really had to leave work. It wasn't until the year 2000 when my illness really started affecting my work. I have lost several months of work due to my mental illness and have been on FMLA. There are times that I gave up on myself, and I thought I couldn't work anymore. But it really didn't get worse until about 2000, which was 12 years ago.
And did you have a breakdown or a psychotic episode that caused you to seek services?
Yes. Like I said, I was in the mental health field, and in 96, that's when I discovered that by observing others with mental illness that I might have that, and that's when I did seek services. Mm-hmm. But I didn't really utilize those services until 2000. At that time, 2002, I had my first hospitalization. I've had numerous hospitalizations where I've been in the psych ward for having either psychosis, depression, panic, or all of the above.
So you're listening to The Pulse on KFNX 1100. I'm your host, Elizabeth Singleton, with my co-host today, Randy Webb. When we come back, we will talk to more, Obadiah a little bit more about his recovery steps, and what is his life like now for him. When we come back from the break, again, I'm your host, Elizabeth Singleton. You're listening to us on KFNX 1100, Independent Talk Radio.
Singleton's Real Health Outpatient and Wellness Centers provide housing resources to those in need. We also offer treatment services in the areas of mental health, physical well-being, counseling, advocacy, education, and empowerment for independence. We work with other care providers and businesses to provide total care for the mind and body. Call 602-626-8150. Singleton's Real Health Outpatient and Wellness Centers, devoted to empowering our community. To see if we can be of help to you, call 602-626-8150.
A child is taken, but there is hope through the Arizona Amber Alert. An Amber Alert provides the public with information that could lead to the safe recovery of a child. When a child is missing, everyone plays an important role. To learn more about the details of a specific Amber Alert, dial 511 or go to azamberalert.org. Together, we can all help save a child. Sponsored by the Arizona Department of Transportation, aired by the Arizona Broadcasters Association and this station.
It's not hard to find ways to invest toward financial goals. The hard part is finding a strategy you can stick with, even during difficult markets or when distracted by new, trendy investments. I'm Charlie Lyko from Edward Jones, and I can help. You cannot control the economy, but you can control how you make investment decisions. Having a time-tested strategy to help you plan for the expected, prepare for the unexpected, and position your portfolio for both. To learn more, call us at 480-491-6900. Edward Jones, making sense of investing. Member SIPC.
Tech Plus Automotive is your complete BMW, Jaguar, Land Rover, Mercedes, Volvo, Lexus, Infiniti, and dealer alternative service and repair option in Scottsdale. From the most basic service to sophisticated diagnostics, our master certified techs will take care of your vehicle's needs with a level of professionalism seldom found in the auto repair industry. Mention KFNX and receive 10% up to $50 off your first visit or $20 off any synthetic oil change. Call Tech Plus at 480-607-1177. 480-607-1177 or techplusautomotive.com.
There are three things that can make investments look attractive: the past, present, and future. Some investments seem like a good buy if you only look at past performance. Others are attractive for the immediate moment, and still others feel like it's where the future lies. Republic Monetary Exchange's position is that gold is all three. Sure, uncertainty is everywhere today, and it could get worse. Much worse. That uncertainty is the very thing that drives the gold market. Diversifying into physical gold stabilizes an investment portfolio in uncertain times, no matter what monetary policies come down the pike. You can even make gold a part of a tax-deferred account, such as an IRA or a 401k. There may also be key tax benefits to owning gold coins when planning generational wealth preservation. Call Republic Monetary Exchange today at 602-955-6500 or log on to republicmonetary.com to learn more. Don't wait to buy gold. Buy gold, then wait. Republic Monetary Exchange, 602-955-6500.
Good morning and welcome back to The Pulse. I'm your host, Elizabeth Singleton, on Independent Talk 1100 KFNX. Again, you can visit us on our website at thepulseaz.com or Facebook at The Pulse AZ Radio. Our guest today is Obadiah Mattson. He was explaining just before we went off to break a little bit about before he was diagnosed with a mental illness and then when he was diagnosed. And now we kind of want to talk about the recovery stages and where you've been in your life.
Well, this is the exciting part. and I want to start off by saying that in 2002, and this is when I was first hospitalized, I had a psychiatrist tell me that I could never work again, that I should just go on benefits for the rest of my life. And this really, 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 really made me angry. It really discouraged me, but it made me angry. And I remember just being really depressed after my first hospitalization, thinking I could never return to work. And I would go to work anyway. I just bought a house. I mean, I had to pay the mortgage, and my house was – I mean, I literally – they moved into the house when I was in the hospital. And so I come home to this new house. I just got told I could never work again. I was depressed. So I sat in this chair, and I did absolutely nothing. And I sat that way for a long time. And my daughter, who was 6 years old – best psychiatric advice I've ever received was from a six-year-old daughter. She's now 16. And she came up to me and she says, "Daddy, you used to take me for walks all the time. You used to spend money and go to Bookman's and buy CDs and books, which is what I like to do. You used to take me shopping. You used to watch TV. You used to listen to music. And you need to start doing those things again." And my father-in-law was really concerned about me, and he was giving me $20 bills all the time to try to cheer me up. And I was so depressed, I just put them in my nightstand. I had a stack of 20s just accumulating. Usually I go to Bookman's with that. And so what I started doing is I took my daughter's advice about music, and I took my favorite happy band. I didn't take like a sad band, but I took my favorite happy band. And I forced myself to listen to them, and I hated it. And I hated the music for a couple of months, but I forced myself to listen to that music, and eventually I started enjoying music again. I started getting my life back. I started coming out of the depression. I also took my family to the fair, and even though I didn't have fun, my family had all this money from that $20 bills that was stacked up, and they had a great time, and that was very important in my recovery process as well.
Now, just to set light on this, it just took that one person telling you to don't try. That set you even more off in your recovery.
It made me angry, but I really think the pivotal point in my recovery was what happened when my daughter spoke to me.
Okay.
I think that's when I actively made a decision, even though I don't feel like doing something, I'm going to do something. You know, the funny thing is in 2002, I was told I could never, ever work. Guess what I do today for a living?
What do you do?
I work for a wonderful agency named Partners in Recovery, and my job is I help other people with mental illness. I assist them with obtaining and maintaining employment. And a lot of them in the past have been told the same stuff that I have been by the quote experts that they could never work, and now they're working too. And it's just so fulfilling to see that recovery is possible for everyone. Everyone with a serious mental illness can recover. It doesn't mean necessarily that the symptoms will go away.
Correct.
But recovery is living life to its fullest, and everybody has the potential to do that.
Yes. And Randy looked like he had a couple of questions for you,
actually.
So we'll let him ask.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Elizabeth. I was going to ask you, Obadiah, what's been your experience with stigma? You know, you talked about people saying, you will never oftentimes think, boy, that's a great way to motivate sometimes.
Well, a lot of times stigma put on you becomes self-stigma, also referred to as shame. And I wrote a poem about this, and I'll read it right now. When you have a mental illness, you do everything you can to hide it. When someone asks you, how are you doing? You don't say, I'm kind of psychotic right now. The voices are really bugging me. You don't say, I'm doing terrible for no reason at all. I just want to die. You don't say, I feel like I'm out of my body right now. Thanks for asking. Instead, you lie and just say, okay. When you have a mental illness, you don't ask your pastor for prayer anymore. You did once and he just walked away. Instead, you say your request is unspoken or you don't ask for prayer at all. Mm-hmm. When you have a mental illness, you don't tell your friends. You did that too. They just said, you're dumping on me, and then they aren't your friends anymore.
Mm.
When you have a mental illness, you don't tell your work. That's the last thing you want to do. Instead, you go to work psychotic, anxious, and depressed. When it gets too hard, you cry in the bathroom for 5 minutes and you hope they don't notice because you don't want to lose your job. When you have a mental illness, you don't tell your family, but they seem to notice anyway. When you have a mental illness, you are controlled by an overwhelming shame. You want help, but you are just too afraid to ask. And I'm just really happy to say I don't have that shame anymore.
Yeah, and what you do for others, because you help them find work as well. What is the – can you tell me a story or a just quick oversight of someone that you helped and how you made a difference in their lives?
There was once a woman that I worked with, and she was confined, and she lived in her apartment, and she never came out. And this was when I was working a long time ago for Value Options.
Mm-hmm.
And what I did is I took her to a movie. She just wanted to see a movie, so I took her to a movie. And what happened is she got so excited by going to this movie that she started going to the movie every single week. Then she started thinking to herself, you know, there's more to life than just movies. I want to start volunteering. So she started volunteering and became a wonderful volunteer. Then she started thinking, you know, I'm a good volunteer. Maybe I should get paid for this. So then she started seeking employment.
Wow. And it just took that, because what you say about the stigma of people saying you can't work, there's no way. Why don't you just collect your Social Security benefits and get your medication that you'll be able to work, because someone is going to not want to work with someone with a mental health issue. You should tell everyone. And I hear that a lot where people say, stay on your benefits. If you go to work, you're going to lose your benefits.
Right.
Well, that's not necessarily true. There are a lot of safety nets in place, such as the ticket to work and the freedom to work, where people can maintain their health coverage. If they have benefits and they lose their job, there's automatic renewal instead of having them reapply. Reapplying for benefits can take years. But if you're receiving services through ticket to work and freedom to work, it's automatic renewal. That's just 30 days.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of safety nets in place for people to return to the workforce. A lot of people just don't know about them.
Well, what was the rewards going back to work or getting back on your feet and going through your recovery? How has working been important to you?
Well, I really love my job. I have found meaning in what I do. I am rich, but I'm not rich in my wallet.
Mm-hmm.
I'm rich in the experiences of working, and I refer to other people with mental illness as my brothers and sisters. I am so happy that I get to work with my brothers and sisters with mental illness and just offer hope and offer encouragement. I have this saying that I've been saying to people for years, and the saying is, I believe in you. And I say that all the time, and it really helps people when they're doing well, but even more when they're not doing well, when the symptoms are really bad, it seems to really encourage them. I still get cards from people I've talked to years ago saying you believed in me, and just by you saying that, it gave me the hope to try to continue, and now I'm working.
Wow. And what about your family? You're married.
Yes.
People with mental health issues can't get married. That's another stupid saying I can't stand.
That was another thing the psychiatrist said to me in 2002 is we had our second child, and she's like, Obadiah, you should just not have any more children. Mm-hmm. Now, my wife and I decided not to have more children, but for her to say that was really offensive. I have been married for next month. It'll be 20 years.
Congratulations.
And so I'm very excited. I have a very loving, wonderful, beautiful wife. She didn't marry me for my looks. She didn't marry me for my money. So I must have done something right. And I have two wonderful, beautiful daughters. I have a 16-year-old who is now working. She's driving. She's doing well. She's studying cosmetology. She dances. I have an 11-year-old who sings. She sings beautifully and is doing really well in school. And is our family perfect? Of course not. But I don't think we're dysfunctional. And I'm really happy to have a family that supports me and loves me.
Well, we will have information for you more about Obadiah Mattson, who has been a wonderful guest. And I hope you can stay on and help me probably interview my next guest. But his information will be on our website and on our Facebook. And thank you for telling us your story. When we come back from the break, we will have Gene Rigdon on our show, who will talk a little bit about case management and case managers and the roles that they play in a lot of our communities. You listen to The Pulse on KFNX 1100. We'll be back after the break.
Dennis Miller, Mike Huckabee middays, Lars Larson afternoons, Michael Savage nights, on Independent Talk, 1100 KFNX.
NBC News Radio, I'm Mike Vaccara at the White House. President Obama is not budging on his plan to raise taxes on the wealthy. While Vice President Joe Biden says Obama would sign a bill extending middle-class tax cuts as soon as humanly possible, if Congress would only agree.
It would take 15 minutes from the time the decision was made by the Speaker of the House to pass and make permanent the middle-class tax cut. The President would probably have me sprint up to the Hill to bring the bill down for him to sign.
House Speaker John Boehner says the White House is stonewalling.
When it comes to the fiscal cliff that's threatening our economy and threatening jobs, the White House has wasted another week.
Former Florida Republican Governor Charlie Crist is becoming a Democrat. Crist tweeted the announcement last night, saying he was proud and honored to join the Democratic Party. Crist served as governor of Florida from 2007 to 2011. This is NBC News Radio.
Hi, everybody. Jim Howell from the KFNX Weather Center. A pretty nice weekend, but it will be much cooler. No more 80-degree temperatures. We're mid-70s today and only about 70 tomorrow with increasing cloudiness. Then for this upcoming week, cooler still, mid to upper 60s. Jim Howell, Independent Talk, 1100 KFNX.
Currently, in downtown Phoenix, it's 60 degrees.
Singleton's Real Health Outpatient and Wellness Centers provide housing resources to those in need. We also offer treatment services in the areas of mental health, physical well-being, counseling, advocacy, education, and empowerment for independence. We work with other care providers and businesses to provide total care for the mind and body. Call 602-626-8150. Singleton's Real Health Outpatient and Wellness Centers, devoted to empowering our community. To see if we can be of help to you, call 602-626-8150.
As a student and teacher of dance for more than 20 years, JAD's mission is to create a rich learning environment for the advancement of an art that can transform people's lives. Visit dancewithchad.com today and choose the dance class that best suits your lifestyle. Email us today. That's chad@dancewithchad.com. If you have a desire to learn how to dance and have an open mind, Chad can teach anyone, anywhere, anytime. Log on today. That's dancewithchad.com.
Have you ever heard of insanity being defined as doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results? How does this apply to your business? Are you already agonizing over your marketing plan for next year? Because it's difficult to know which marketing works. How about your salespeople? Do you know what's going on with every lead you give them? Speaking of salespeople, do you provide easy access to their leads even while they're out of the office? By the Numbers has a proven solution and system that will allow you to keep your finger on the pulse of your leads, sales, and marketing. Call By the Numbers at 480-652-9212. That's By the Numbers at 480-652-9212. You can also see us on the web at getbythenumbers.com. That's getbythenumbers.com. Sales and marketing doesn't have to be so complicated. Call By the Numbers at 480-652-9212. One small change can make a big difference. Call By the Numbers at 480-652-9212. Adjusted for Life Wellness Center is your one-stop health destination. We empower our patients to see health and wellness as a lifestyle rather than a quick fix. Adjusted for Life Wellness Center focuses on reversing chronic conditions. We are truly passionate about helping people live healthy lives. Take a good look in the mirror. If poor health is not allowing you to live life to the fullest, call us at 480-802-9977. That's 480-802-9977.
Hello and welcome back to The Pulse. I'm your host, Elizabeth Singleton, and you are listening to us live on Independent Talk 1100 KFNX. Before we went off to the break, we were saying thank you, to Omadiah, who came to talk to us about his mental illness. He is still here in the studios with us, and so is Randy Webb, my co-host. And our guest is Gene Rigdon, who has been a case manager for over 20 years. And I wanted to talk a little bit about what is it like being a case manager, and you know, actually, like, why do people go into that field? And what is it like now, and what was it like in the past? And so, Gene, if you can tell us a little bit about yourself and your background, and share some of your information with our audience.
Okay, I'm Gene Rigdon, and I am originally from Texas. I was 35 years old when I decided I wanted to take some classes and went to the community college and got a book and saw in there mental health. Well, what is that? This was in the 70s, and I knew nobody with mental health. I had seen some movies over some mental health hospitals. During this period, the news came on and said, oh, there's been some marvelous medicine that psychiatric patients can take, and we're going to let them out of the hospitals. We're going to put them out of the psychiatric hospitals. So that was about as far as I knew. I didn't realize I ever knew anybody that had a mental illness. Well, I started this course and fell in love. My first job was working in one of those clinics that the mentally ill went to when they got out of the mental hospitals. Wonderful experience. Wonderful experience. From there, I went to Catholic Family Service and was a case manager for refugees. A wonderful experience. I'm so lucky. I have all wonderful experiences. From there, I moved to Arizona and worked at Terrell's Co-Occurring Ladder Program and got the experience of being able to work with mentally ill folks, practically one-on-one, my biggest learning experience. From there, I went to Value Options and became a case manager on the forensic team at 1300 North Central, and which the criteria for that was is you have to have been incarcerated and have a mental illness to be on that team. Then it worked into an ACT team.
And what's an ACT team?
An ACT team is a very intense a program for people who need more services than what they ordinarily would need. We have very small caseloads. They need to be seen more often. They just require more services.
Are you talking about seen in the clinic, or
no?
Is that
seeing
them
in the clinic and doing case management work at visiting with them at their home in the community. Let me explain a little bit what a case manager is.
Okay.
A case manager is assigned people who usually are at a clinic. The clinic I worked at was Stu, Value Options, in Magellan. We are there to give services to people for their needs, such as there are people who do need more services than other people. And the services are, for instance, like housing, which a client may not be able to go out on his own and actively look for housing. So the case manager should do that assisting. Job assistance, which is what Obadiah has done before. We have people on our staff that do that, and case management should have a big hand in that. With Value Options, I feel like that we did more intense case management because we have a lot of clients that literally can't go to a doctor's appointment, a medical doctor's appointment, because they can't sit and wait 2 hours for the doctor to call them in. They either get, you know, paranoid, or they get very stressful, and they will leave, leave the doctor's office before being seen. That was part of our case management, is we would go and take people, our clients, to the doctor, and we would sit with them and make sure that they understand what was being told to them, what the medical problem was, what was the medication. Because even when I go to a doctor, it's real intimidating to go and sit in a doctor's office and then have the doctor say, well, this, and this, and you're going, what? I always make notes and say, well, what's this and what's that? And so those are some of the services, you know, that we case managers did.
And a forensic act case manager is, that's a different type.
Yeah, a forensic case manager, the criteria for that is you have to be incarcerated and have a mental illness.
Hmm. And are they provided more services, or is just that, do you see them, do they come to visit you, or are you going actually to the prisoner, the jail, to visit them?
We do that also. We can go to the prisons and visit people who are being, let's say they're getting out of prison in a couple of months, and we're setting them up on our caseloads. We do that. We also, for our clients that are incarcerated in the city jails, we do visit those clients once a week.
And Randy and Obadiah, you can jump in at any time if you'd like to ask a question.
Sure. Yeah, I'll ask this question, Jane, if I might. I have worked both in the children and the adult system, and I always noticed the transition from people going from, say, adolescence to adulthood face certain challenges as it related to case management. What were your experiences with working with folks who were really young, just coming into the system, so to speak, just now, you know, just for the first time maybe getting services as an adult?
The transition is, I think it's better now. Before, the adolescents that were coming in, getting out of their system and coming into our system, got lost.
Mm-hmm.
And that was not a good thing. A lot of times, if you're 18 and you've been in that system, you're just said, bye-bye, have fun, go your way. And you're not given, really, a case manager. If you are given a case manager, you are told, okay, you got to show up at the clinic at 2 o'clock and ask for so-and-so. it's very hard because these kids that come out of their system into the adult system are kind of lost. And my understanding now is that some of the group homes in the system are a little bit more active. Randy, you might could give me some information on that too, that they really try and set this up. And the case manager will go over and meet them and so on and so forth. But that hasn't happened in the past, and I think it's just now coming about. Is that correct?
It looks that way to me, yeah. Mm-hmm. I was just kind of curious as to what case managers may go through with that.
Well, what I was told away, I'm just going to make this in the comment, was in the, say some of the past services that we've had, and our services are now trying to be more integrative when a child right. comes from yeah. child services until adult services. The tragedy part about it a few years ago was that a child would be introduced on their 18th birthday into the adult system not knowing where to go, and then this exactly. case manager had to find housing quickly yeah. for them.
Just
or
like that.
You know, and understanding that some of the children may have lived in group homes or lived at home,
yeah,
but say, let's just say the ones living in a group home may have not really experienced the outside world and understanding how to budget for themselves, understanding how to get services, understanding, I have to catch the bus. And I even had, one time someone said that my case manager said, it's a really scary place here and you're going to be really scared.
Right.
But now the services have increased to where now some of the providers are having that introduction phase where the case manager meets the client a month or two ahead of time. They're kind of brought to the facility
right.
And integrated into what the system is like there. And then they're also, we're saving for them now to get them a budget, to get an apartment
absolutely.
If they're going that way.
Yeah, that has improved greatly. A few years ago when clients were just said, okay, there's a street, you're 18.
I don't want you to go too much into that until we come back from the break, but
okay.
You're listening to The Pulse on KFNX 1100. I'm your host, Elizabeth Singleton. When we come back from the break, we'll talk a little bit more about case management. Thank you.
Did you know short sales can erase all home loan debt?
Don't walk away. Many banks and the government now pay sellers to complete short sales.
I'm Rick Elton.
And I'm Dave Elton. Elton Realty has served the Valley for over 15 years.
Every short sale is different. Outcomes are not guaranteed.
Call for a free consultation that best serves your situation and get a fresh start today.
480-451-3318. That's 480-451-3318.
Or visit eltonrealty.com.
If you've taken glucosamine for sore joints and really haven't noticed anything, it's no surprise. A recent scientific study says that glucosamine, chondroitin, and combinations are no better for joint pain than a placebo. So don't rely on hope alone. NovaJoint offers fast help for sore joints in just 2 weeks, sometimes sooner. Don't wait. Feel great. Get a deal on NovaJoint with coupon code Laura, L-A-U-R-A, or save on 3 bottles with Laura 3. Visit NovaJoint.com or save time and shipping costs by buying locally at Healthy Habit Health Foods in Phoenix, and love how you feel.
My clients have personally called to thank me because they haven't lost any money in their annuities. In fact, many are earning nice returns right now. Hi, this is Steve Lance, author of Annuities, a 21st Century Pension Plan. If you're tired of stock market losses in your 401k or your investment accounts, my book is a roadmap on how to immediately stop the losses and quickly recover so you can enjoy the retirement you've planned for. You deserve some good news, so call me at 800-445-2516, 800-445-2516, or go to AskMrAnnuity.com and get your roadmap to retirement.
Hi folks, I want to introduce you to McCarthy Law. McCarthy Law is a law firm dedicated to negotiating for large reductions in their clients' debt without the need for bankruptcy. If you have too much credit card debt, home equity lines of credit, or even medical bills, McCarthy Law might be able to help. For a free consultation to see if McCarthy Law can help you, call 602-456-8900. Even if you make good money, you may still have the opportunity to reduce what you owe. Call 602-456-8900 to talk to an expert at McCarthy Law. 602-456-8900.
Hello and welcome back to the show. You're listening to us live on Independent Talk 1100 KFNX. Before we went to the break, we were talking about the adolescent system, or the child, when children are becoming of age and moving on into our adult system. And, you know, just to explain a little bit more of that, those systems do need some improvements on them. Hopefully we'll see a lot of that coming in the next year or so, that they would have more of a transition, and I'm hoping more of a 6 month to a year transition.
Absolutely.
Into the adult system, so it's not a scary event and they have more of a chance of a recovery outcome that's positive. So, but just, oh, but I had a question for you, and yeah, I'm going to give you, just go ahead and ask.
Okay, well, it's not about the child system, but it's about the forensic system. First of all, Gene, I want to thank you for your 20 years of service to individuals with serious mental illness. Thank you for doing that. But the question is this. NAMI and SAMHSA also have done research on mental illness and people who are in the criminal justice system, and have determined that most people who are in prison do not have a mental illness. In fact, especially with the serious crimes, that more people without mental illness commit violent crimes as opposed to people with serious mental illness.
Correct.
And I want to ask you, because there is so much stigma out there that people with mental illness are violent, that they're criminals. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have Jared Loughner, we have the situation in Colorado. Working in the criminal justice system, what is your opinion about that?
Okay. I was thinking about that driving over here today, about people that the Tucson incident and the different incidents, you know, basically they don't go on to explain. They'll just say, oh, he has a mental illness, or people think he does. They don't go on to explain. Maybe this person wasn't diagnosed. Maybe he had a crisis before he got a chance to be diagnosed, because most young people that I experience, which is practically, I'd say 90% of them, especially males, begin feeling symptoms when they're like 17, 18, up till they're 25, and they don't want to tell anybody because everybody's going to think they're crazy. They don't want to say, oh, I'm hearing a voice,
right,
because their peers are going to say, oh, you're just crazy, you know. And so they don't seek help until there's a crisis. And sometimes even if they seek help and is told, well, you have a mental illness and this and that, they get lost in the cracks. They don't continue their medication. They don't actively seek help, because they think, no, I'm not going to do that. And that's when they have the crisis and things like Tucson happen.
But with something to note, what you're saying is that if someone is with all of news, and you have people in the communities that are saying, okay, if someone commits a violent crime, they have a mental health issue.
Yeah,
they just assume that it,
right,
is. And just like, you know, before with the Colorado shooting, the first thing was, oh, he's crazy, he has a mental health issue. And
that's not always true.
Right.
But you have a lot of individuals going into jail, maybe with that diagnosis, maybe they've never been diagnosed before, or people who, I think what you're saying is the stigma that's going on with,
right,
saying that people going into jail who've committed violent crimes are mentally ill. When it has been shown that most individuals with mental illnesses are the victims, or they're more likely to become the victim or more
and
vulnerable in that situation. And it's not always that individual suffering from a mental illness that is committing a crime.
Right.
But it's easier to put it on mental health.
Mm-hmm.
And
that is true.
I think just recently with the guy pushing the man into the subway system, and then he ran off and took off his clothing and rolled in the dirt, and everyone's saying, oh, you know, he's sick, he's mentally ill, and come to find out that wasn't the case. Allegedly, right now, I don't know the full story on that. But the first thing was, oh, here's another crazy person who needs to be off on the street. But this person is, from what they can tell now, perpetrating it.
It looks like that categorization of just kind of labeling people. You were referring to labels earlier, Obadiah. I thought that was really insightful. That we, it has a way of kind of distancing us from folks, kind of forgetting their humanity.
Mm-hmm. Now, when the people that belong on the forensic team, there's only two forensic teams in this whole city with probably five case managers. If you commit a horrible violent crime, you're going to be locked up in jail. You're not going to be on the Forensic Act team. Most of our clients were trespassing, a small drug offense, and they ended up in jail just like anyone else did. And so when they got out of jail, they were sent to our area. But it's a very small population of our mentally ill. Mm. Very small. If there's how many clinics here in town?
20
or something. And out of that, there's only two small forensic act teams.
And that's not even a full clinic. That's just
That's not even a full clinic. That is just two small teams with maybe six case managers on that team. When the clinic has maybe three or four other teams also, and that's with all the clinics.
Now, if we talk about case management, and I think that everyone probably here in the Valley, or not here in the Valley, but everyone here has had a bad experience with a case manager. But if we look at the positive sides of what case managers actually do for other individuals, the ones that are good, the ones that get into the field because they love helping other people, what is your ideal of a good case manager and the services and that they can help? One thing that I know this is kind of a double question, but one thing that I have seen is that there are case managers who are enablers that take on a client or a recipient and look at them as they could never do anything, and so they want to do everything for them instead of giving them that independency. But what is just your views of a good case manager and the roles that they need to play within the services that they provide to their client?
I think basically, to start out with, what I consider being good case management is having empathy, being able to step in somebody else's shoes, and understanding what it's like to be that person. That's a good start. I think a good case manager will listen to their clients instead of just saying, well, this is what you've got to do and this is what you're going to do, and to really listen to that person. Each person is an individual, and each person has their right. They have a right to be shown dignity. They have a right to be respected. And a case manager needs to figure out what services benefit these people, what they can do on their own and encourage that, and what they do need help on. I know that, you know, like I was saying about the doctor's visits, I don't like to go to the doctor myself, but if you can put yourself in somebody else's shoes and know that this person has a problem sitting still for a long time or waiting for appointments for a long time, making sure that comes about, knowing your client, knowing what their needs are, knowing what they can do on their own, setting goals and boundaries for your clients, particularly really just listening to them.
Did you have a comment to go along with that?
Yes, I did. I think a good, I'm going to say psychiatric staff.
Mm-hmm.
A good psychiatric staff practitioner, I think an important quality is the philosophy of what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't have the philosophy, you might not be doing a good job. If you have the right philosophy, all those other things like knowledge of services and things, those can be trained.
Correct.
But a good psychiatric staff is someone who has an unconditional belief and an unconditional hope that a person can recover and live life to their fullest. Unconditional meaning no matter what the person has done in the past, relationships that may have been lost, jobs that may have been lost, substance abuse, spending time in jail, no matter what has happened in the past, that person still has the potential to live life to its fullest. And that's what I believe a good psychiatric staff does, is have unconditional hope and unconditional belief.
Well, I would like to thank all of you for coming out to the show today. I would like to thank my audience. I would like to thank Cedric, who's here volunteering his time to take pictures for us. Randy, Webb, thank you for coming on the show.
Gene,
thank you for being a wonderful guest, and I hope to have you on again. Obadiah, thank you for sharing your story. And for information on either one of our guests, you can find it on our website at thepulseaz.com. I would like to thank my wonderful producer who puts up with me, Jennifer, and my confusion all the time. And I would like to thank all of you. Have a great Saturday. Thank you for tuning into the show. You're listening to The Pulse on KFNX 1100 Independent Talk. We'll see you next week.
Hi, I'm Dr. Bob Marshall, host of Healthline. Join me live to get your questions answered and hear the latest breakthrough information for you and your family. This month, the HCL Detox Kit is on special. This is your opportunity to stock up on the single most important supplement for all of us who must eat cooked food when all of us mammals were designed for raw food. Just imagine, you may be able to get a second chance at healthier years by supporting the body's natural cellular remethylation and best digestion. Don't be fooled. These benefits only come from natural source products like those found in our HCL Detox Kit. Don't eat cooked food without it. Get three kits for the price of two. Call 800-370-3447. That's 800-370-3447. Experience nutrition that really works.
Healthline with Dr. Bob Marshall every Saturday at 9 a.m. here on Independent Talk 1100 KFNX.
You're listening to Independent Talk 1100 KFNX, Cave Creek, Phoenix, a division of Premier Radio Stations, the home of the Dennis